Hello. This is Dr. Yolman, and I'm here at
Jesse's Barbershop.
Jesse's Barbershop. And what we're going to do now is we're going to interview Mr.
Bill Clark.
Bill Clark. Mr. Clark, how old are you?
75.
Mm-hmm. And have you lived in the city of Dayton most of your life?
Just about all of it.
All of it?
Yeah, we came here from Central Kentucky in 1949.
Came here from Central Kentucky in 1949. By the way, where in Central Kentucky? I'm from Kentucky.
Springfield, Kentucky, where Abraham Lincoln was born.
Oh, okay. So, in 1949, you would have been how old?
I was six.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, where did your family move and live in the city?
We ended up in the Oregon District on 6th Street. No. Tecumseh Street. 12 Tecumseh. And there was probably 25 people lived in that house. It had been cut up into little sleeping rooms and apartments.
Is that building still there today?
Yeah. David Greer, the famous downtown attorney, lives there now.
Oh, I suppose they turned it back into a single...
Yeah, it's a single dwelling now.
Uh-huh. Was that a good place to grow up?
It was. We had a lot of good neighbors. Everybody had a common cause. They was trying to make a better living for themselves and for their children.
You said 1948?
49.
Mm-hmm. So that would have been just after the war. Was your family, and did they move here in some way because of the events of the war or after that for the jobs?
My dad just got tired of trying to make it on a small farm and came up here to try to get a better job. And my mother also. And
so, you know, Coach Don Donaher of the UD basketball mm-hmm. team once told me that back in the 50s and the 60s that they taught three things in Kentucky: reading, writing, and high 75.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Well, they didn't have 75 back then. It was Route 25.
Route 25.
Yeah. And I don't know how this plays into this, but people say, well, Bill, how'd you end up in Dayton? I said, well, we followed the bologna rinds and the Spam cans and mail pouch tobacco, empty pouches of tobacco, and that's how we got to the river down there, and we crossed the river, and it said clean restrooms. And we cleaned restrooms till we got to Dayton. And Dad said, I've never worked so hard in my life. Said, let's go back where we come from. Said, the heck with this place. So we started going down 25 south again, going back home. State trooper pulls Dad over. Said, you got any ID? And Dad said, what about what? What do you want to know about? I just want to go home where I come from. And so we got down to that bridge and said, Kentucky left. And we had to turn around and start all over again, cleaning those restrooms. And you think us Briars haven't had it tough.
That's a great story.
I know you probably didn't want all that.
No, that was wonderful. So you grew up in the Oregon District, and did your family stay there?
About 10, from 6 till 10. And then we moved to Old North Dayton. And Mom and Dad bought their first house off Louise Kramer, who was a real influential woman in this Dayton. And she almost owned half of North Dayton. She owned Kramer Brothers Foundry over there, and a lot of the people in North Dayton worked at the foundry.
And did your family work there?
No. No, my dad started off as a hod carrier for a bricklaying crew, and he ended up becoming a bricklayer and a contractor.
So, what high school did you go to high school, and what high school did you go to?
Kaiser High School.
I'm sorry?
Kaiser.
Mm-hmm. After high school, what did you do?
I worked for my dad. I was a laborer for my dad. And I had two brothers who were bricklayers, my brother Tony and my brother Jack. And I just didn't have the complexion for the connection. I was too fair complexion. The sun just, you know, it baked me. I mean, I looked like a red lobster about every day in the sun.
So then you started looking for another occupation.
I had to get inside somewhere, and I tried a couple of factory jobs, and I didn't like them. I just wasn't cut out for factory work. So I went to barber school in 1969 on Fifth Street, down there where the Spaghetti Warehouse is now, right next door to the Spaghetti Warehouse, I'm sorry. And I've been a barber now for 50 years.
Wow, 50 years. So you said, to back up just a moment there, you said that you didn't feel like you had the temperament for the factory work. And can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, it was too repetitious for me. It was just, I worked at McCall's Printing, and I wake up in the middle of the night almost like having nightmares catching McCall's magazines and Reader's Digest. And I thought, before I'll lose my mind doing this, I'll learn me a trade or a skill. Yeah. And so I went to barber school.
And so, and at that time, probably a lot of people looked at those factory jobs as really plum jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially if you got a job at NCR or General Motors or somewhere like that. You know, Dayton Rubber and Tire, you had a great job.
Okay, so now what I wanted to ask you about, we started the interview about the arcade, but I'm also going to ask you about here this experience you had in the area down by where the Dayton Arena is now. Mm-hmm. And you told me a little bit about that. Why don't you tell me that again?
Well, me and my brother-in-law's brothers, the Robinson boys, we used to go swimming down there in that area. And we played a game called tag. And these Robinsons were excellent swimmers out of Crossville, Tennessee. They were exposed to lakes growing up. And me, I wasn't that good of a swimmer, so they'd swim up, tag me, and I couldn't catch nobody, you know, so they were like Tarzan in the water. They made no splashes. They just cut through the water like cutting through cheese.
So you said there were houses over there at that time.
Yeah. In that Edgemont area, there was plenty of homes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would that have been over by the corner of 75, the edge of 75, or closer to Welcome Stadium?
I believe so. It would have been right in that area. Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry, what year was this again?
That was probably 1960.
Okay, so in subsequent, and you thought it was a gravel.
Yeah, I thought it was a gravel pit or maybe an old gravel quarry or something. I don't know. Maybe they mined it for gravel. I really don't know.
After we get done here, I can tell you a little bit about that.
Okay.
That I found out. So in your memory, you've been in Dayton all these years. Mm-hmm. And experienced the city's change. Mm-hmm. And before I go on to ask you about UD and the basketball team and anything mm-hmm. you may remember about that, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your thoughts about how the downtown was in the past that you mentioned earlier to me.
Okay. Oh, we had as good a downtown as any medium-sized city in the United States. It was wonderful. We had many theaters, great places to eat, and we had greasy spoons. If you wanted a cheap meal, there was plenty of those. Pawn shops, entertainment. It was just a great town.
Yeah. You mentioned theaters. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we had several theaters downtown. We had the RKO Keys, the Colonial, the State Theater, Lowe's. Those were all big, nice theaters. And the Keys probably being the premier one of the bunch. I mean, it was a beautiful theater. I don't know what they call these things where they had the little pigeonholes on the sides where the, like, love nest up there where people, you know, guy and his girlfriend or his wife would sit up there. And there was more theaters downtown, but some of them I didn't patronize. I really didn't know they were there at the time. But then down on Jefferson Street, we had second run theaters, and a lot of times they'd play westerns, and you would it was very, very reasonable. It was 15 or 20 cents to get in back then, and we would go to those on the weekend.
So when you say back then, are you thinking what years?
Early 60s, very early 60s. when I went to those, the Ohio, the Columbia, and the Rialto.
And you thought that the nicest was?
Well, the nicest one of the bunch to me was the Archeo Keys.
Those theaters, I teach a little on film history, and I teach a class on the history of film theaters and things like this, so my students are going to love to hear this.
Yeah.
What was it like to go to a movie back then?
Oh, it was great. When you went to a movie then, you dressed up very well. You wore your best shoes. A lot of times you wore a suit and a tie and come downtown and looking as sharp and pressed as you could be just to go to the movie.
That's great. And on the inside, they had concessions, and did they sometimes have bands, or was that completely gone by then?
No, I don't remember bands. Now, later on in a couple of theaters, I did see professional boxing matches. And that was in the mid-70s.
When a lot of these theaters downtown had kind of begun to have trouble.
Were in financial trouble and stuff like that. They were slowly going away.
Okay. And so I guess that's a segue to talk about the decline of the downtown. Is, of course, a lot of those old theaters ended up becoming, for lack of a better word, art theaters.
That did happen, yeah. There was a couple of them. And we did have a burlesque down on Fifth Street that was pretty well known, and, you know, a lot of people went there, too.
What theater was that originally?
Well, it was just a burlesque where ladies would come in and they'd tell jokes. It was almost like a later day vaudeville type thing, and it was comedy routine, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And okay, so now back to the question of the arena. Now, UD has been a big part of the community here, at least at the edge of the downtown area.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in thinking about people who didn't go to UD and who lived in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
What did they think about the campus, or did they think about it at all?
Oh, I'm sure they did. And me, myself, personally, I got to know some of the nicest guys that I ever met in my life that went to UD. Some of the students, they were from New York and New Jersey. I used to shoot pool at the National Bowling Alley on Brown Street, just down from UD. And some of those fellows, we became good friends, very good friends.
That would have been, again, in the 60s?
Early 60s, yeah.
So in the late 50s in the later 50s and the early 60s, there was some trouble between locals and students at UD. And on a couple of occasions, they closed down Brown Street to the students. Can you tell us about that?
I remember that very well. What happened was, a lot of those Brown Street boys up there was kind of like a little gang, and they resented these guys because they were from out of town. They didn't sound like us here. You know, they had that New York, New Jersey accents. And plus, generally, they were young male guys, and they were nice-looking fellows, Italian guys, nice-looking boys, and they was taking out a lot of the local girls. And the Brown Street boys did not like it, and they'd go up there and whoop them. They'd jump on them and beat them up sometimes. And there was one boy up there, and I think he was the one, I can't remember his name, but he was the one that made it off limits, the students off limits on Brown Street for a while. They couldn't go any of the businesses down there, the thing you're talking about.
Okay.
And plus the Brown Street boys, they'd have parties all the time. The UD students would have parties, and they would have kegs of beer and liquor and stuff, you know. They all seemed like they had spendable, you know, money, and they would and the Brown Street boys would go up there and steal their beer and stuff, you know, and take their kegs of beer and drink it.
So back then, I think there was a what is now that old barbecue was called the Heidelberg. Maybe a little bit before you, or
no? I remember when Joe Keesh started the Hickory Barbecue. It was the Heidelberg Bar. It was a real good neighborhood bar. And they told Joe when he come in there that, Joe, you won't make it here because you got too much competition. You got the Westward Ho right next to you. You've got Sutt Miller's, and you've got the steak place up on Brown Street, Pine Club, and you had the Italian restaurant over here on North Main. I can't across from the fairgrounds. It's gone now. But you have so much competition. They told Joe he couldn't make it. Well, Joe made it and made it very well. He did good.
Okay, so. So on that topic of the conflict on Brown Street, that gets us to the broader question, though. So you had good experience with lots of UD students. Mm-hmm. And at this time, at least by the mid-60s, not only were the students changing and being less from Dayton and around Dayton and being more from out East Coast, but they were also having different ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and how did that play itself out with the local community?
Well, as I understand it, the restaurants and everything, they love the students up there because, you know, they spent good money. You know, they ate out a lot. And I think it all went over pretty good. I think the students were a plus for that area, a big plus. And you know, a lot of people accepted them. I just thought the world of them myself. You know, I got along with them very well.
Okay, so on that topic, now I'm going to ask you the question about the arena, the building of the UD arena, and then more generally about the UD basketball team and maybe its meaningfulness to the community of Dayton. Mm-hmm. So it really, you know, got started in the late 40s with Blackburn. Yeah. And then took off in through the early 60s until he died, and then Don Donaher took over, and they did a lot of good stuff. And so from a Daytonian perspective, what do you think about that and the history of that for the city?
All the UD and the basketball team was a big plus for Dayton, Ohio. I mean, it's well known. They've had great teams. You've had some guys up there, you know, the Hatton brothers, Bucky Bockhorn, and all those fellows that played up there. You know, they all end up staying here, and you know, and making a you know very good living around here. But it was a big plus all the way around.
So you mentioned them staying here. Do you mention that because you can still see them here, or?
Well, yeah, I still see Bucky Bockhorn every once in a while at a restaurant or something. And the Hatton brothers, I'm not sure about them anymore. One of them was in real bad health, and I don't know about the other one anymore. It's been a while.
And do you remember when they went to the NCAA and played UCLA in the final?
Yeah, I remember that. That was a big thing here. That was huge. And that's what Lou Alcindor was his name then, and they kind of knocked us off, but we had them going there for a while.
So do you remember, was there any, as they made their way through the tournament that year and it got bigger, was there any celebrations in the downtown?
There could very well have been, but I don't remember that part.
The next year, the team didn't do so well and started off at least badly, and then they went on to, in the end, win the NIT championship. Do you remember that year very well?
Not very well, no.
All right, then. And how about, then, let's talk about the arena. Do you remember anything about the construction of the arena and discussions about the construction of the arena and subsequent things?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, and the next question that I want to ask you about is your partner here, Mr. Grady, and I talked the other day. And he told me a little bit about his experience as an African-American man growing up in Dayton and how there was tension and challenges for him. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience of that time and those issues, if you'd be willing?
Well, you know, truthfully, I don't remember a whole lot of bad race relations because white people used to be very accepted over in the West Side. Before the riot, And in you know, a lot of white people, white guys especially, would go over Rubenstein's store, and there was a couple other stores that it sold real nice later day clothing, you know, and nice straw hats and stuff like that. Even myself, I used to go over there and buy some of my clothes, and I was never ever had the First Amendment trouble.
But the by the race riot, you're thinking of 1966 race riot?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's and after the riot, then it just race relations excuse me got real bad.
Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and ask you some questions about the arcade because I have you here, and I'm still going to have my students come in and do this interview with you, but if you don't mind. But I did want to ask you a few questions about that. One thing is, Mr. Grady and others have told me they really felt that the arcade was a great place for people of color to come in, and they didn't feel discriminated against.
They were accepted. They were very well accepted, you know, because, you know, they were mannerly, and, you know, it's, well, I don't know how to put this. It's not like present day, you know, it's just everybody just... They got along pretty good, very well, and I've been at the American Way many, many times, and there'd be a black guy standing by me and eating a hot dog and drinking a Coke just like me, and you know, he never said nothing to me. I didn't say anything to him, but we just nod, and that was it.
So you mentioned that you knew some people who lived in the apartments.
The one fellow that I knew very well was Hughes Wright. And he was from Ashland, Kentucky. He was a very light-complected black man, or African-American man, as everybody's known now. And he was one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. Me and him took to each other just like we were related or something. And he was my buddy until the day he died, you know, and I knew him for 50 years.
When did he pass away, sir?
He's probably been gone for 10, 12 years now, maybe.
What did he do for a living?
He was a shoe shine man. He shined shoes in different... I first met him at a little barber shop on Jefferson Street back in the late 50s. And he gave me a shoe shine, and me and him talked, and we become friends.
And at that time, did he live in the arcade?
He later on, in the 60s, he lived in the arcade. And he lived in there for quite a while.
So you didn't know any of the other people who lived there?
No.
But did you kind of get a feeling about what kind of people lived there?
I think it was a lot of it was people that liked downtown, worked downtown, and maybe were a little little low on money, you know, but didn't have high earning jobs.
Do you happen to that? That's great. That's a great help. How about? Do you happen to know they tended to be women or men?
I think it was both, yeah.
And that was probably, you're thinking here, early
60s. Early 60s, uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, and, okay, so now inside the arcade, what could you tell us about the people who walked around and the stores and the experiences that people had inside the arcade?
Well, it seems like everybody was in there generally shopping or eating, or they worked there. And but everybody had a job and had somewhere to go. And they used the arcade sometimes as a cut-through, too, you know, from Ludlow Street and 4th Street and different things.
Oh, so the fact that the arcade was kind of, was a public access, right?
It was, yeah. It had... It had four or five entrances, and at least.
So there was a lot of through traffic.
There was a lot of through traffic, and there was a lot. There was a lot of people that worked in the arcade and around the arcade. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in the early '60s, what kind of stores besides the restaurants? We talked about Culp's and the fish market.
Yeah.
What else was in there?
Oh, there was a store in there that sold poultry, you know, chickens, and it was like a grocery store, and and the arcade also had, you know, had the restaurants, and Now, let me think here. I'm having a little bit of a brain. I'm having a brain lock.
That's right fine. That's fine. Well, when my students interview you again, you can think about this.
I'll be thinking more about it's, you know, racking my brain for memories. And
well, how about this? Can you remember offhand any of the characters or people who used to hang out there?
No, not really. I can't.
Okay. You think about that, too. And now here's a question for you. In the 1970s, that started to have trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then what can you tell us about that?
At that particular time, I wasn't coming downtown a whole lot in the 70s. It was in the early 80s when I come down here and started barbering downtown.
So in 1980, they did a remodel of the of it. What about that?
It was beautiful. They done a wonderful remodel, and all the cornucopias and all the, you know, all the decorations on the wall were real perfectly done. And they had upstairs. They had a lot of retail. They had two fish restaurants in there, and I've got a brain lock and I can't think of their names. But one was downstairs when you come inside the arcade from the 3rd Street entrance. There was one right there, and it had one of the best fish sandwiches ever. Scrodwig sandwich, they called it.
What was
that? Had homemade bread in there to put that fish on that homemade bread. It was excellent.
What was the name of the sandwich?
Scrodwig.
Scrodwig.
Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting. And then a few years later, they still had trouble. And then a few years later in 87, they did another remodel. And this time, they cut out the floor.
Yeah.
And so could you tell us about that?
Well, to me personally, when they cut that hole in that floor, that was the beginning of the end for the arcade. Because what happened, a lot of unsavory people, prostitutes, stuff started hanging downstairs, you know, where the in the lower level, and there was a lot of crap going on. There was a lot of drug dealing and you know, girls of the night or whatever you want to call them. They were hanging out down there. There was a little bar, a little nightclub there, and that just ruined everything.
Do you remember the name of that club?
I don't, not anymore.
So you think that the fact that they cut out the floor did that?
I think it did, because a lot of people, a lot of low-life characters, you know, they're like rats. You know, they scurry around, you know, where they don't get seen too much. And that was just perfect for them, that hole in the floor, and then they had the bar down there and everything. And I think that was, I really hurt the arcade.
So your feeling about that was probably, you, when you experienced it, you were like, oh, that's not great. And mm-hmm. Do you think others had that experience as well?
I know they did. I heard it from different people that they hated it when they cut the hole in the floor. It just ruined the looks of the arcade and everything.
Okay, great. So now I'm going to end with just a couple last questions. Mm-hmm. And now they're talking about remodeling the arcade again. And they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? And maybe some of the earlier events surrounding, you know, the talk of it going all the way back to the, 1990s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think this new renovation, I think it'll go over good, because you got high end people behind it now. You got UD and I forget the name of the other group, but I think it'll do very well.
Okay, great. Well, sir, thank you very much. Do you have any last thoughts you want to add, despite the brain freeze, that you can think of?
Well, I'd just say Dayton's a fine place to live. I really enjoyed growing up here, and I would say Dayton to anybody.
All right, great. So that was our interview today, and thank you very much, sir.
Okay.